Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the home for the best fantasy football fantasy games. I actually set up my first team over the weekend. Alex and I are going to work more on creating leagues, but definitely check out the content for fantasy football over at Euro Fantasy Game, and also a lot of great Serie A articles. Yesterday I wrote a piece ranking the best midfielders in Serie A. So on this episode, we're going to do our usual winners and losers on Monday from the Serie A weekend. We're going to answer some of your Twitter questions. We're going to finally take a deep dive on Atalanta. We brought in a great guest, Bruno Bottaro. I think you'll enjoy that. And also, we're going to have a new segment towards the end that we're going to tease now and then talk a little bit more at the end of the show, something that a lot of people has been asking for. But before we get to that, I am joined by our great friend, the producer of the podcast, my co-host, Alex Goldberg, who's crushing it on Twitter with his videos. So, Alex, people want us to be a little bit less structured, so let's try to chat a little bit more in depth on this great Napoli-Milan match from Saturday. So I'm going to try what I did the last time we chatted, not lead you down a specific path, but just leave it a little bit more open-ended for you. So my question is, did you see this more as Milan giving it away or Napoli just turning it on and being unstoppable?
It's a good question, David, and it probably is a little bit of both, but honestly, I'm giving this one more to Napoli, because I'd kind of be a hypocrite if I said, oh, Milan gave this one away, because last week I was saying I'd be surprised if Milan made it a contest at all. I thought this was a really unfair match for Milan this early in the season. First of all, it was still their first game of the season with a bunch of loose parts, as I said last week. And then what Napoli has going for them is their cohesion. They know each other. They know where each other's going to be. So, yes, they got up 2-0, and that's Milan. But, David, you know this. 2-0 is the most dangerous lead in football, and it really proved out to be. I wouldn't say they necessarily choked. I just think Napoli kind of looked at it as like, wait a minute, we're still on the front foot here. We're a really damn good team. We think very highly of ourselves. We are creating chances. All of our players are out here. The crowd is behind us. And I also think, David, they kind of knew. You know what? Milan scored 2 goals on us. And by the way, one was a golazo. I mean, the Bonaventura goal. Sometimes you just have to tip your cap and just applaud a great goal. Sometimes that's what you need if you're Milan, when you don't necessarily have a lot of cohesion and chemistry. You kind of need a goal like that to get you going. It was actually a nice build-up play as well. But I think Napoli kind of just looked at the facts, David, and was like, we got this. We still got this. And I think the cohesion of Napoli really proved to be the winner. And honestly, if I'm Milan, yeah, it sucks. It sucks to not come away with at least a point. But I think they should at least be proud of the way they battled for the whole game and even got on top. But no, to answer your question, I think Napoli won that game. I don't think Milan choked that game.
Yeah, that was my reaction to, we saw this a little bit too against Lazio. Napoli started really slow once they had their backs against the wall. It was almost like they had a button to activate Sarri mode, and we kind of saw the bubbly, great football that we associated with their former manager. But that almost sounds dismissive of Ancelotti, and I think this win had a lot to do with what he did. I think Ancelotti brings a quiet confidence that maybe they didn't have under Sarri. Sure, they played the more exuberant style of football, but Ancelotti adjusted the formation a little bit. They went to a 4-2-3-1, and then Mertens and Milik were almost playing as two strikers together. So we had a little bit more variety just in Sarri's 4-3-3, and that was really good. I think, too, to be honest, the gap in talent was really, though, pretty apparent, especially in the second half. I mean, you look, Biglia didn't have a good match at all, but once he came out and Bakayoko came on and he had deer in the headlights, look, I'm not going to write him off as his first match in Serie A at the San Paolo against Napoli's midfield. That's as tough as it gets. But you look at the gap in talent. Napoli, on the other hand, they brought in Mertens and Diarra off the bench. Those two subs changed the match. I thought Diarra was absolutely brilliant once he came on. You know, I'm at the point, and I've been saying that this, like, some people think it's a hot take, but I just don't even see how Napoli can really start Hamsik anymore. I look at their other midfielders. I mean, Zielinski, of course, and Allan. I thought Allan was the man of the match. Was absolutely brilliant. Zielinski had the goal, could have had more. And, you know, Diarra to me changed the match. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that. I feel like Hamsik now is really more about reputation. I mean, I don't know how you can't not start those three guys moving forward. I don't know how you feel about that, but I thought that was so much better in the second half.
David, that's, you have a lot of good takes, but honestly, since the new season has started, I think that's your best one so far. I think Hamsik is really a shell of himself, and maybe he still has some left in the tank, but also maybe being under Sarri helped. But as you said, he also wasn't really great last year either. And considering the depth they have in the midfield, and now with Zielinski, I don't think Hamsik necessarily should be a starter for Napoli. And, you know, this goes back to something with when there's a managerial change, there's always players that benefit from it, and there's players that maybe suffer from it. As I said, Hamsik, you know, did well under Sarri for the most part. But I think Zielinski is really going to benefit from Carlo Ancelotti being there. I think besides Alan, who I agree, you know, no one's in N'Golo Kante, but you've talked about how he's kind of there in N'Golo Kante. He's honestly a little bit better polished offensively, but Kante's probably better defensively. But nonetheless, Alan is your must start. And God, Zielinski, those were two great goals and huge goals. And it's performances like that that I haven't felt in a long time from Marek Hamsik. So yeah, I'm Hamsik out, as they would say, David.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's no knock on him. And to me, it's no surprise that Napoli really wasn't that upset when he was linked to Chinese club. I think De Laurentiis wanted a big offer. I think that was too, A, because we know he likes money and to make big returns. But also, I think he could have saved face. Had a big offer came in for Hamsik, he could have sold it to the fans. So let's see what happens. You know, I want to be fair to Hamsik. Now they have him in a new role, essentially replacing Jorginho. But it has more to do, to be honest, with how highly I rate the other midfielders on Napoli. So let's close on this, on the match. I know you and I texted about this over the weekend a few times. So Sarri had this quote that, you know, that he really likes the Premier League, and that in Italy, if a club goes up 2-0, the match is already over. Not the best timing. Of course, we saw not only his former team, Napoli, come back from 2-0 and actually win the match. And then on Sunday, we had Inter and Torino, and we'll talk about it more in the winners and losers, you know, coming back with that. So what was your reaction to that? I know you were pretty hyper on the Sarri interview for good reason. I have to say I'm shocked at how polished he's been so far. Maybe he was trying to appease the fans over there a little bit too much. But as a fan of Serie A, and look, I love Sarri, I can't say that I didn't find it and enjoyed it a little bit when he was proven wrong.
Oh, I think it's hilarious because honestly, Sarri overall has said everything correct about Chelsea and about the Premier League, and he has definitely not ruffled any feathers, and people are really pleased with how he's been in press conferences and interviews. It's just funny, the one thing he said where he got it dramatically and drastically wrong was not about Chelsea, it was about Serie A. Being up 2-0, the game's over. Not only was that proven wrong in the Napoli-Milan game, it was also proven wrong in the Inter-Torino game, as you said. Inter was up 2, and then Torino tied it 2-2. So, I love Sarri. It's just funny that quote immediately went downhill. We say that tweets and quotes don't age well. That didn't age at all. So it was definitely funny. But yeah, overall, I am impressed with the way Sarri has handled himself. He seems really polished all of a sudden, and I didn't expect that. And his English has also been a lot better than I expected it to be. But you've said this too. I don't know if we'll fully know how we'll handle the English media until Chelsea lose. This is definitely this is the honeymoon phase, no doubt. But nonetheless,
I love Sarri, and it has an even to do because you're a Chelsea fan. I love Sarri. I hope we never have to find out. That means he goes undefeated. But look, we know with him, when things go bad, that's when it kind of turns around.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, I hope I never have to deal with the downside of sorry in press conferences after losses, because I never want to lose. But overall, he really has done well, even when he's been asked uncomfortable questions like Eden Hazard's future, Williams, Thibaut Courtois, just transfers in general. I think he's been handling very, very well. But yes, once again, it's still the honeymoon phase, so maybe things will change. But for right now, I can tell you all of the Chelsea community is really impressed by Maurizio Sarri. So, David, that concludes our top segment. Let's move on to now our winners and losers segment, which we do on Mondays. Week two of Serie A is pretty much done, except for today's game. So, who are winners and losers of episode 148 of the Calcioland podcast?
Yeah, it's probably my favorite segment. I think it's kind of a nice way to recap the week of the weekend of what we saw. So we'll kind of go in order with the matches. So before that great Napoli-Milan match, we had Juve's win against Lazio. Really nice job by our friend Matteo Bonetti on ESPN. Definitely keep supporting his work. Things are going rather well there. So we had a interesting match. Ronaldo didn't score, but it was still an eventful match. Definitely winner is Bernardeschi, off really to an excellent start of the season. Had the game winner against Chievo, was decisive in this match as well, was also able to get right into the starting lineup. We had talked about on the podcast how it was possible that he could be moved in a midfielder's role because Juve is so stacked up front. But if he keeps playing this way, like, he's going to be a starter up front as well. Then we had Pjanic with a superb goal, and our man Mandzukic as well. Rather interesting to see how him and Ronaldo were switching positions, playing off each other in that match. So those are our three winners for Juve. Then, of course, in that Napoli-Milan match, you mentioned Alex Bonaventura's great goal. I thought even Borini, a lot of Milan fans were really upset that he started, was very good on the assist. I think, you know, we saw with his defensive work and his willingness to put in the work, maybe why Gattuso started him in a match away against Napoli. So I'm going to put Bonaventura definitely as a winner, Borini as a half winner. And on Napoli, a couple of players that we already highlighted, Zielinski. I mean, if there ever was a match where, you know, you read all the hype on him being a poor man's De Bruyne in that match, you kind of saw why. Alan, I've been on his bandwagon for quite some time. I really remember that was like a Vidal performance at Juve. The only thing he's missing is the goals, which granted are very important as well. But his work rate, ability to always be on the ball, he's improved passing-wise, had the assist on the decisive goal, and also a huge shout-out to Diarra coming off the bench. I think he could really benefit a ton from Ancelotti and really develop. I mean, that's just look at that midfield, Alan, Zielinski, Diarra. And this is Napoli also has Fabian Ruiz, highly rated, you know, another ace up their sleeve. So their midfield is just stacked. Then we had the game. We had Spal with a big win against Parma. We have to give credit to Spal. They are, after two games, they have 6 points, won both. They haven't conceded any goals. The only teams that have yet, the only other teams that have yet to concede goals are Roma and Atalanta. We're recording this about an hour before they play. So huge start to the season for Spal. They also had a goal from Mirko Antenucci, a superb goal. The former lead striker has been really important for them. And I almost forgot that Spal held on to their right wing back, Lazzarri, who had a great match against Parma. Really exciting player. One of the best right wing backs in Serie A. Really underrated. I'm surprised no team, you know, like Sampdoria or Fiorentina went after him, because he's definitely ready to take the leap. And look, you know, points at the beginning of the season count as much as points at the end of the season, and Spal's off to a very nice start in the race to avoid relegation. Then we had Fiorentina put up 6 goals in their first match. Benassi with a brace. Gerson, who arrived from Roma, really motivated, had a great performance as well. And then we had Simeone score a goal with his dad in the stands. That's always really nice. Although Chievo gave up 6 goals, we want to give a shout-out to defender Tomovic. His goal celebration, he highlighted Davide Astori, his former teammate. That was actually beautiful. All the stadium gave him a big ovation for that. Some other winners, Genoa striker Piatek, who had scored 4 goals in a Coppa Italia match, scored in his Serie A debut. Genoa, of course, didn't play the first week because of the tragedy in the city, but Piatek scored in his first goal in first match in Serie A. So well done there. We also have Udinese off to a nice start to the season with 4 points. Manager Velasquez, who I think is one of the youngest, if not the youngest manager in Serie A history. I got a full disclosure. I've yet to watch Udinese, but I've heard good things of his style of play, so they are on my to-do list to watch. And then we had Pavoletti score 2 goals for Cagliari. It ended up being a draw against the Swallow. But Pavoletti, if you're in a fantasy football Serie A league, Pavoletti is a player to watch because on a provincial side, he's going to score a lot of goals. Devastating on headers. I think on Rai, they said that 10 out of his last 12 goals were off headers. Don't quote me on that, but he had 2 goals off headers and really a dangerous striker. We also want to give a shout out to Sassuolo, who came back and got a point against Cagliari. They're off to a nice start under manager De Zerbi, which is another Calcioland favorite. And we have to end on Torino. What a turnaround. In the first half, Inter totally dominated them. I think in the second half, Torino looked like a different team. Although the match ended in a draw, it almost felt like a loss for Inter and a win for Torino. Some individual shout-outs. Right back, De Silvestri. Almost looked like Mike Conn at a night at San Siro in the second half. He was superb. Midfielder Miete, who we talked about last week, very impressive so far in his first 2 matches in Serie A. And then up front, Iago Falque, a player that we've always liked on the podcast, probably the player of the match there. Di Marzio reported that despite interest from Spain, Iago Falque is going to stay at Torino. Very important player for Mazzarri. On the other hand, Jajic had a really good match. Like, there's some games where Jajic just looks like an absolute game breaker. Really could have scored even more against the Inter in that match, although he might actually leave. To our friends in Turkish Twitter, he's linked to both Besiktas and Fenerbahce, and if that was his last match for Torino, that was a great way to go out. I'm actually really intrigued to see how Mazzarri is going to juggle his front line once Simone Zaza is ready to play more regularly. So those are our winners. We had quite a few. Let's look at the losers. For second week in a row, I got to put on this list Milinkovic-Savic. You guys know I have very high expectations for him. Last year, when Lazio traveled to Juventus Stadium, he put in an amazing performance. Not so much on Saturday. Same with Luis Alberto. Now, those two players, it's really important for Lazio for them to get back on track. Lazio have lost their first 2 matches. Look, it doesn't get any worse than facing Juve and Napoli, but now they have 0 points. They have to beat Frosinone at home, and they probably have to do it in convincing fashion. So both Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto are losers. I'm going to put kind of as a loser Bonucci. He got booed a lot by Juve Ultras. It was interesting that the non-Ultras, the non-Curva Sud, was very welcoming. At least it seems so on TV. Bonucci got whistled quite a bit from the Curva Sud during the match. It looks like after the match he apologized. So let's see if this gets resolved. I think sooner rather than later, this is going to be a non-factor. But Bonucci probably has to do more than just respond on the pitch. But I thought he played quite well. And I think in the sense he's a loser because of the issue with the fans. But I really think his passing ability is something that Juve is going to really benefit from. Then for the Milan match, we mentioned Bakayoko struggled. We won't pick on him too much. It was his first match in Serie A. Biglia had kind of a shockingly bad performance. Milan doesn't really have an alternative to him. I'm not a big fan of Locatelli, but if Biglia keeps playing this way, there's going to be a lot of fans that are going to bring up Locatelli fairly or unfairly. And Donnarumma as well, he struggled quite a bit. Maybe he isn't totally set up to succeed in Milan's new formation, but he has to do better. Milan really needs him to get back to what he was like in his first season in Serie A, especially for what they're paying him. Speaking of a goalkeeper that struggled, we also had Handanovic with a very poor performance against Torino. Now, I think Inter fans are going a little bit overboard with the criticism. Granted, he was bad, but overall, I still think he's a huge asset to Inter. There's been so many matches where he bailed Inter out when they struggled. So he's entitled to one bad game as well. Let's see if it's a trend, but I think right now he's being written off all too much. And another one on Inter is Dalbert, continues to really struggle. Spalletti is really betting on him. Spalletti would really like to use Asamoah in the midfield more, but Dalbert has to step up as a left back, and so far he's really struggled at Inter. And then the last loser is Chievo, very un-Chievo-like. And while Spal hasn't given up any goals so far this season, Chievo have given up 9 in 2 matches. Granted, they were facing Juve and they traveled to Florence to play Fiorentina, but 9 goals is a lot. When Sorrentino comes back healthy, that should help quite a bit. So those are our winners and losers for the week. Now let's get to our Twitter questions. As always, our listeners are essentially co-writers of the show with me. I put together a lot of stuff on the show, but you guys complement the show really well with the questions. If you want to send us in a question on calcio, transfers, the transfer window still going on in some countries, journalism, writing, TV, music, films, just do so with the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. With Gattuso wanting to play possession football from the back, would they be better off starting Pepe Reina over Donnarumma?
It's a good question. And someone, too, was asking me on Twitter, why did Pepe Reina leave Napoli to go to Milan? Are they really paying him that much more? And look, you know, when Pepe Reina signed with Milan, and that happened last spring, I think almost everyone's expectation was that Donnarumma would be sold, and that Milan would turn a big profit on him. And when that didn't happen, they get stuck with both. Now, a lot of people brought up that Reina's familiar with playing at the San Paolo. Now Gattuso's trying to build from the back, so he'd make more sense. But I'm a firm believer that Donnarumma's too important for Milan's future long-term, both as a player, but also potentially as someone that you can make a big profit on, because, again, he's a homegrown player. That's like a pure plus Valencia, essentially, if he leaves. But Donnarumma, too, with the salary that he's paid, it's a little bit harder to sell him now that he's one of the highest paid players in Serie A. So as much as I get the idea of Reina should maybe play if Gattuso wants to go this style of play, I personally wouldn't go with this style of play for Milan. I would try to play to Donnarumma's strength and go that way. I don't think Donnarumma, I'm not sure he can ever develop as being good with his feet. But maybe this isn't the best game plan for Milan right now.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Will Roma regret selling Kevin Strootman?
It's a very interesting transaction because this goes back to, you know, the windows closed in Italy, but it's still open in France. So Roma can't replace Strootman and whatnot. So you can peel this onion a lot of different ways. So let's start of, you know, will Roma miss Strootman on the pitch? I got to be honest, I was a huge fan of Strootman when he first arrived in Serie A. You know, when I hear a player being described as a tank, I can't imagine a player fitting that description better than Strootman when he arrived. But, you know, he had multiple knee injuries, the same knee, his left knee. To me, he just hasn't been the same player in quite some time. I think, you know, he lived off reputation quite a bit. So I don't think they're going to miss him that much on the pitch. And look, because he was at the club for so long, getting 25 million plus bonuses financially is a huge boon for Roma. I think, you know, his amortized value was so low that it's almost like a 20 million profit. Because for 25 million plus bonuses, so financially, it's a great move. I'm more intrigued to see what Cristante and Zonzi, De Rossi, Pastore, even Cioric, who was very impressive, can do in the midfield. But to me, what's also interesting is it doesn't look like Strootman particularly wanted to leave. It's kind of same with Nainggolan. I think Nainggolan said many times that he would have stayed at Roma, but they made him understand that, hey, this is the last time we can make a profit on you and we're just going to do it. I don't want to read too much into body language. It doesn't seem like Strootman was particularly thrilled with the move. But at the end of the day, he also accepted a five-year contract where they're going to pay him big wages, $4.5 million net of taxes. That's a lot of reasons to accept the move. But what happens for a lot of players, and what's really underrated, is some of them really love living in the city of Rome. So interesting. I personally don't think Roma is going to really regret selling Strootman, but I do think perception-wise, this feeds into more and more than Roma as a supermarket, especially selling a player that on paper was a starting caliber at a time that the window in Italy is closed. But, you know, who knows how much perception matters. If Roma does well on the pitch, people will forget that and they'll say, hey, you know, it was the right thing to do. So in the end, the ci del campo, but I can see a lot of reasons why Roma did it.
All right, David, how about this one? This one is very interesting. Roman loyalty helps Roma now, but can it hurt the club long term? Would Totti and De Rossi play this long for Juventus?
Think long and short of it, we know the latter part, that there's no way Totti and De Rossi would have played this long for Juve. I actually think Del Piero and Marchisio are pretty close examples. There's a lot of parallels between the two. Juve would have almost certainly made show them where the door was and saying it's time to go. So Juve is maybe a little bit too businesslike in this sense, and Roma, on the other hand, is a little bit more romantic in it. But I also think, you know, that Juve and Roma, and this is no knock on Roma, are a little bit of different levels. I think Roma, you know, we talked about their social media team, that because of the way the club is, they can be a little bit more adventurous on social media when Juve is really buttoned up. So I don't necessarily see it as a knock. I think to the city of Rome, there's so much pride in being a Romano de Roma, being someone from Roman from the city of Rome, and both Totti and De Rossi were, and Florenzi as well. Not surprisingly, he extended his contract. So I think there's a lot of positives. I think the fact that Roma was able to keep Totti in his prime, you know, the loyalty to Roma in that sense really worked out. So I'm kind of going to say that I think overall the loyalty to Rome works to their advantage. I don't know, you know, how would Roma have won more had Totti and De Rossi left? For me, that's a little bit hard to say. So if you're not sure that it's definitely going to translate into wins, why not have this romanticism attached to the jersey and the city?
Ah, I love this next question, David. Would Antonio Conte be a better fit on Inter or on Milan?
So here we go. We're already starting the speculation. Milan lost their first match. But even before then, I mean, we had talked, there are some Milan fans that have serious doubts about Gattuso, and they know that Conte is out there. Inter's off to a slow start for sure. And Conte's out there. Actually, Conte was at Juve Stadium for Juve Lazio. So, you know, he's in Italy, but before Conte signs with any other club, he's going to have to figure out that issue with Chelsea. If you know anything about Conte's tenacity, he will not let go easily. So let's talk completely hypothetically. Where would it make more sense for Conte to go? Now, Inter has more talent. They're in the Champions League. So on one hand, you could say that makes more sense for Conte. But let's look at what Conte is really good at. I think Conte is in his element when there's really low expectations and you need a turnaround and you need to get the most out of maybe talent that isn't of the highest caliber. So I think Milan's actually perfect for him. I really want Gattuso to succeed. I think he absolutely earned the right to start the season. I'm not going to overreact to the Napoli match. There are some positive things that Gattuso did, but between those two clubs, I think he'd be a much more good fit at Milan. I could see him at Inter, where there's already a lot of pressure to succeed. It's a little bit more like in the his second season at Chelsea, and when people had expectations for Juve in the Champions League, Conte didn't do particularly well. So that's my take. What do you think, Alex, on this one? You are a Conte expert after all.
Oh boy. I do not go to Inter. Antonio Conte should not be going to Inter. I'm sorry. Those are, and I'm really not even trying to bash the guy, but he would just not use those players in the way that I think they should be used. He would water them down. Milan, I still think, I know Gattuso is trying to play a little bit differently, but I still think the structure of Milan fits a little bit better for Antonio Conte. Hey, and Bakayoko's there, and he clearly kind of wanted Bakayoko. So, I'm just going to more say not Inter, but I'm not necessarily saying go to Milan either, but I'm definitely saying do not go to Inter, Antonio Conte. All right, David, last Twitter question. Could we see either Torino or Sassuolo competing for a Champions League spot?
Man, look at this. Inter has made these two clubs look so great in the first two matches that people are already starting to talk about Champions League. So long and short of it, no. And I think this has more to do with the strength of the top six and that Atalanta and even Fiorentina, after one match, look like better contenders for this. But I do think there's a lot of reasons for optimism on both clubs. For one, Torino spent pretty significantly in the summer. They bolstered the squad. They brought back Soriano and Zaza to Serie A. They brought defender Izzo from Genoa, one of the most underrated moves in Serie A. So I think Torino, there's a lot of reasons for optimism, especially with Iago Falque appearing to be staying. So I could see Torino in that 5-7 range at best. I'm not sure they can do better than that. For Sassuolo, I think what's realistic is a season where they comfortably avoid relegation, where they're never really in trouble for it. We talked a lot on the podcast about their manager, De Zerbi, really has the potential to become the new Di Francesco, who also strived at Sassuolo. There are a lot of parallels between the two. So I'm not going to go Champions League spot, but I definitely think there are some reasons for optimism on both. So thank you, as always, for the Twitter questions. I want to take this opportunity to thank our listeners for being co-writers of the podcast, but also our marketing department. We rely on you to spread the word about Calcioland. If you like what you hear, please tweet about it. If you have friends that are on the fence with Calcio and they need a little push, please direct them to our podcast. If you are listening to us on an iPhone, literally takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star review. Just search for Calcioland, scroll down a little bit to ratings and review. You can tap 5 stars. If you want to take it a step further and leave us a comment, Alex and I read them all. So we really appreciate your support. We really rely on you to keep growing. So for the interview part of the segment, we are recording this about an hour before Atalanta faces Roma. We've talked about that we wanted to give more of a spotlight on Atalanta. So we have a guest that we found through Twitter, Bruno Bottaro. Alex and I recorded this interview before our segment. It was really excellent. I'll tell you one thing that I really enjoy on Calcioland is during the interviews, I try to ask questions where I'm going to learn something. And I learned a ton about the history on Atalanta and what makes them so great. So let us know what you think. But it was a real pleasure to have Bruno Bottaro on. And for the interview part of the podcast, this has been very long overdue. I think on the podcast, we do a good job with the top teams in Serie A, trying to cover them every so often, a check-in with all of them. We have our colleague Paolo Mangone coming on to talk about the mid-table teams, the battle to avoid relegation. But we've never really dedicated an interview segment to Atalanta, one of the best stories in all of Calcio right now. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on at the club, and we want to give them their due respect. So Twitter came through. You know, it can be a place where you can network and find some great people. I was looking for someone to help us cover Atalanta the right way, and Twitter came through. It was recommended that we invite Bruno Bottaro, who is currently working at TRT World TV in Istanbul. We love Turkish Twitter, but more importantly, he's originally from Bergamo, the town that Atalanta hails from. He's been an Atalanta season ticket holder before moving to Turkey. So I can't think of a better person to have us kind of talk a little bit about what's going on with Atalanta. So, Bruno, it's a real pleasure. Benvenuto a Calcioland.
The pleasure is mine.
Okay, so Bruno, as I mentioned, I'd like to give a little bit more of a background on Atalanta to some of our listeners. We have some hardcore Serie A fans that I think know a little bit what Atalanta is all about. And we have some newer fans to Atalanta who, you know, have seen Papu Gomez and how exciting they were in the Europa League last season. But this is a club with a long tradition. They've had a lot of famous players who moved on to bigger clubs. They've developed a lot of talents. They are described in Italy as La Regina delle Provinciali, the Queen of the Provinciali. And normally, you would, I don't know if you'd take that as a huge compliment, but Atalanta really takes pride in that, Bruno. So if you had to describe Atalanta's history and what the club's all about to someone that doesn't know much about them, how would you do it?
Well, I agree. It's right to say that Atalanta are the queen of Provinciali, even though they, like, unlike Verona, they never managed to win a Scudetto. And there's just a Coppa Italia in the club's headquarters, and that's a trophy that has never, like, has been won in the 60s and then never been won again. Anyway, like, Atalanta has represented a quite wealthy province, Bergamo, and is a team that was founded by Swiss immigrants and investors at the beginning of the century. So the team and the fans have always praised Atalanta as a club with values, particular values, like tradition, hard work, and dedication. This is why some last captains, I can remember Gianpaolo Bellini and Cristian Raimondi, were considered as part of a legacy, part of a traditional family tree, like that started with the fusion of Atalanta and Bergamasca, because everything started back then. And that's the reason behind the word Atalanta BC, not the usually AC or FC as we see with Italian clubs. Because the B stands for Bergamasca, for Bergamo, and connects the team with the city forever. That's very important.
Yes, I grew up in Padova, and Atalanta was always a team that we aspired to. I was a young goalkeeper. I was actually pretty good, and I could have gone to try out for them, and I couldn't have gone, but my mom wouldn't let me leave Padova, and I really regret that. So they've always been kind of like such a great club to develop players. So let me ask you, I feel like there's a lot of people responsible for the resurgence of Atalanta in recent years, and probably the Percassi family, who are the owners, are probably really central to the success. I know they were affiliated with the club. They came back not that long ago. So how would you describe the influence of the Percassi family on the club?
Well, the Percassi family has been decisive to bring Atalanta from a provincial level, like, to a real professional level. So they're not anymore the queen of Provinciali, but they're an Europa League club now. And in fact, after they managed to get a Serie A promotion, I think 7 years ago, I go by heart, like, and the club was never relegated under their guides. But it's unfair to forget the Ruggeri family, the family that managed the club for decades, and in a time of huge spending from all the Italian club's owners. We remember Gaucci, we remember, like, all the clubs like Lazio and Fiorentina that risk bankruptcy. Atalanta had a spending review policy under Ruggeri that was harshly criticized by the fans, I remember. Anyway, Atalanta, under the Ruggeri family, built the Zingonia Center and managed to get it at a higher level. And now it is one of the best football academies in Italy, in my opinion. So Percassi got this legacy and brought it further towards Europe. And that was the final aim. And the other aim is the stadium that has yet to be realized, honestly.
So let's talk a little bit about the stadium, which is a very interesting situation. It actually sounds like a typically Italian situation to me. So Atalanta is one of the very few clubs that actually own their stadium. They bought it from the Comune di Bergamo not that long ago, which is great, but the flip side is right now the stadium doesn't meet UEFA regulations. So I think they're playing in Reggio Emilia, their games in the Europa League. So tell our listeners a little bit about the stadium. It sounds like down the road, this will be a huge competitive advantage for Atalanta, but give our listeners a little bit of background on the situation.
Well, this is one of the most controversial issues in the city for football, and also a personal regret, honestly, because going to the most important match in Atalanta's recent history the one against Borussia Dortmund, and spending almost 3 hours in my car to get there, as all the other people from Bergamo, was awkward. Atalanta belongs to the Atleti Azzurri d'Italia, that, to be honest, nobody calls like that in Bergamo. We call it simply Comunale, which means municipal stadium. And that's like the stadium of the municipality for many years. And here are some problems that many clubs in Italy have with infrastructures start from this municipal thing. Atalanta bought the stadium from the municipality, but they still have to wait for an approval to start building due to the world famous Italian bureaucracy. It's really a long story that, for example, as Roma fans and other fans, like, for example, in Venice, there's also an example. They know it also better than Atalanta fans. Anyway, Atalanta will close one stand and demolish it and then rebuild it and so on. Like, one stand at once until the stadium will finally be modern and safe for its fans, because it's not quite safe, honestly. It's like a iron stands. One close to each other. It's like very, very dangerous sometimes. And so the club will finally manage to play in Europe, in Bergamo, I hope. And the Percassi family will leave this stadium as legacy to the club, to the city, if they ever want to sell one day, maybe with a profit, as a businessman may do in the future, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's great that long-term it's going to be a huge competitive advantage. I mean, you can really count, I think, on one hand, the clubs that own their stadium in Serie A, so that's great. So let's talk a little bit about the fans of Atalanta. This is something that I've always been fascinated with. So last season we saw Atalanta had the trips to Liverpool and they played Everton. They went to Dortmund to face Borussia Dortmund. So some really signature trips, and the Atalanta fans travel in big numbers. I'll add a little color to it as well. You mentioned Verona earlier as the other kind of big provinciale. And, you know, I have a lot of friends that are ultras in Padova and other teams, and they always tell me there are two fan bases that you do not mess with. And one of them is Atalanta and the other or Hellas Verona. So we have, the great travel and also the reputation, which to ultras is a good reputation, as being really tough. So tell our listeners a little bit about what makes fans of Atalanta so special.
Well, having gone to the stadium many times, I can just say that, the Curva Nord supporters have always been Atalanta's real power. It has been a boost and sometimes also an issue, as you say. But if you go to Bergamo and you experience that stadium, you will witness that it's a matter of passion. Every year, there's a party called Festa della Dea, Party of the Goddess. And also, there was a tank that was borrowed by the club. With the tank, the players were crashing cars with the colors of the other teams. That was one fact. And the other year, there was like something with hot air balloon to announce a signing. And, it's crazy, but it's also positive as a boost also for the players, because players enjoy playing in this atmosphere. There are choreographies and pyros and this stuff, and they enjoy it. But people from Bergamo and from the north, actually, have like this prejudice against us, I would say, not just them, as cold-hearted people, things like that. I can say that football for Bergamo with Atalanta brings out every Sunday hot-hearted part of the city, which is the one I personally quite miss at the moment. And it's also a chance for young people to have fun in a city that closes down almost every activity every evening at 9 p.m. because it works like that in Bergamo, honestly. And that's not the part I miss living in Istanbul. So when I had a season ticket in the last Serie B season of the team in 2010, I believe, there were 18,000 of people for a game against Siena. It was a full house for a second division match. And I don't know how many teams in Italy, but also in the world, if we exclude like the championship, they can say that they have had these kinds of records in a second division. That's a real boost. And their leader, like Claudio Galimberti, surnamed Il Boccia, is a real star for ultras fans from all around the world, these people that want to interview Il Boccia. And that's a controversial character, honestly. I find it particular, but he is now banned, and now all the fans, they bring banners to the stadium in support of him. And it's a controversial issue. We'll see how it comes out and how it develops. But anyway, the fans all together, if you exclude maybe those hardcore fans, but all the Curva Nord is always amazing and people go there just for passion for the people. And that's positive, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And then, look, you know, what you describe with the ultras isn't, you know, just with Atalanta. We see that with a lot of other clubs as well. So now let's talk a little bit more about the current team. And let's start, and I really appreciate you giving us a great background on what Atalanta has been and what they're all about. So now let's talk a little bit about the team. Of course, the Percassi family has had a big impact, as you said. Atalanta has always had a great youth system, always great at scouting young players, then turning big profits on them. But I think someone that's really helped them elevate what Atalanta is all about is manager Gasperini. Since he arrived, I really think he fits what Atalanta does quite well. So tell me a little bit your impression of Gasperini and what has he brought specifically to Atalanta?
Gasperini was like dynamite for Bergamo. First of all, he arrived, he was very humble in spite of all the good job he did, for example, in Genoa. And this was appreciated by the fans and by the city. Then his coaching style, I say it fit perfectly with Atalanta's historic strengths, like a very good academy, a patient community that was able to wait for 2 months before seeing any results from the team. Many people don't remember, but the first 2 months under Gasperini were quite worrying. Atalanta were thinking about how to escape relegation, and the quarrel between the coach and goalkeeper Marco Sportiello wasn't well received between the fans. Sportiello had to get away and to sign for Fiorentina.
Yeah.
And what happened afterwards is under everyone's eyes. He was able, Gasperini, to keep the team really compact and to give trust and belief to people and to players that usually weren't fighting for like anything after March. After the relegation is like finished with the fights. And then I can say Gasperini also brought a great football style, which is changing and improving month after month, actually, because the first Gasperini team in Atalanta was different, the last season team, and now Atalanta is even different. So it's really a pleasure also for neutral viewers, in my opinion, not just for hardcore Atalanta fans or for people from Bergamo.
Very interesting. So now let's talk about the actual players. And look, Atalanta, they've sold a lot of players in recent years. Last summer, the year ago, we had Kessi, Conti be amongst the players that left. This summer was no different. We had Caldara, who briefly went back to Juve before heading to Milan. And of course, Brian Cristante, who's now at Roma. So tell me a little bit how you think Atalanta is going to be able to replace the production of two very significant players. I mean, I think Caldara was one of the best defenders on Atalanta. Cristante had a breakout season, scored a lot of goals. But Atalanta has been able to replace players like these in years past. So tell us how you think they're going to do it this year.
Yeah, I think Caldara had already been replaced last season, actually, with a player coming from Atalanta's fantastic academy. His name is Gianluca Mancini. He already proved his fit for Serie A and he can cope with the pressure. So regarding Cristante, the matter is more complicated for me because Brian was kind of like, he became one of Atalanta's leading goal scorers, even if he just was a midfielder in theory. Gasperini transformed him into a new player, a different player from like the Pescara midfielder on loan. Like, he was also, he had a stint in Palermo. He didn't impress anyone. He came to Bergamo and became a star. So in his plans, the plans of Gasperini, of course, we can imagine that he wants Mario Pašalić in that position, in that role. So with Mancini and Pašalić, Atalanta would prove once again that despite every year they have to sell some players in order to cope with like financial issues and the financial fair play they were already respecting before the financial fair play existed, because with Ruggeri it was like that. They always find the right replacements. So arriving once again to Europe may not be a problem, in my opinion. Also because Atalanta got stronger. They sold also Petagna, and they bought one of the best strikers in Serie A, Duván Zapata, and they have Muzabarro. Muzabarro is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a young striker from the Gambia. The Gambia is a state in the western part of Africa. And there are two players in Atalanta that are originally from the Gambia. One is Colley and the other is Barrow. Barrow already played and scored last season, so we'll have fun in watching him playing this season.
Yeah, I really liked Barrow at the second half of last season, and I was actually surprised that Atalanta, they really added a lot of offensive players. Like, as you mentioned, Zapata ready to go with a great front line. Ilicic, you know, has his moments where he's devastated. I mean, Atalanta is really a loaded attack this year. So speaking of that, let's talk about Papu Gomez, who I think, you know, casual fans of Serie A know of him. Definitely this, probably the signature player right now on Atalanta. But give me a sense where you rank him historically amongst the players that Atalanta has had over the years.
Well, the best player in Atalanta's history was considered to be Cristiano Doni. Anyway, as many of the cultural and listener will surely know, Doni was being involved in the 2011 match fixing case. He already was a legend for the club. And then his fame, also in the city, went literally to bust. After Doni, Atalanta fans desperately need a new icon, like a, the best player ever. And Gomez like came exactly in the right moment for that, bringing Gladea to two consecutive Europa League experiences. I hope they're going to be like that, actually, because you know, on Thursday we'll see. But if Papu keeps on going like that, and if he keeps on refusing offers from all over Italy, because it looks like he refused Milan last season and Lazio this season at least, he's on the right path. And one day he might be remembered as another great player, Claudio Paul Caniggia. Argentinian, another Argentinian, another real legend, always in Bergamo, really a hot-hearted man. And like Papu, he conquered everyone, and Argentinian players in Italy, they always feel like home.
Yeah.
And in Bergamo, that's no difference, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Papu is colorful for sure, but I think Caniggia is probably more colorful in other ways. Yeah, definitely quite the character. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned, I remember him now on Atalanta. It was really impressive there. So you mentioned already a few players, and Barrow's definitely high on my list. But are there other Atalanta players? They don't have to be young, or maybe some of them have been there for a while, that you think don't get enough respect, like maybe Calcio fans should be more aware of them. Anyone that jumps out at you in that regard?
Yeah, there's just one player that I would like put a tag of underrated player of Atalanta. That player is Remo Freuler. Remo Freuler is a Swiss midfielder, like the Swiss founders of Atalanta, honestly. So there's this also this connection, but apart from this stupid connection, Freuler fits perfectly in Gasperini's tactical system. That's everything. And usually he's the key to unlock many matches as midfielder. He plays in this 3-4-2-1 system. As midfielder, is not easy as role because sometimes you play against three midfielders and you are two midfielders. So it's like he needs to be constant, to have quality and quantity, and he has that. He combines also a game of tap-ins and shots from a long distance, and he seems to be quite complete. And it just surprises me how he's still quite unnoticed and nobody's really talking too much about him. And another key player, I think, in the last seasons has been Masiello. After this controversial like match-fixing experience, also in the 2011 match-fixing case, many people in Bergamo didn't want to give him a chance, especially there, where Cristiano Doni was an idol and it went into bust. Masiello wasn't like really appreciated, but the Percassi family didn't listen to critical voices and just gave him a chance. They let him train, and so far it has been a great choice, as Masiello has performed very well and is almost a leader in the dressing room. And that's very important because Atalanta needs leaders. One leader is Papu, but Papu is also really colorful. And I think the real leader in the dressing room might be Andrea Masiello.
So, Bruno, I can't thank you enough. You've more than made up for the fact we haven't shown enough love to Atalanta. Is there anything else at all that we didn't cover that you're like, I really want someone who follows calcio and who's getting into calcio that they need to know about Atalanta that we didn't cover?
Well, I think so far that's everything. But when Atalanta will arrive at the eighth phase of the Europa League, I hope at least we can all we will talk about many other things. I hope at least, because this match against Copenhagen is going to be really hard in Denmark. Yeah. But as Atalanta did last season with Everton, they won away. With Lyon, they won in Reggio Emilia, and in Reggio Emilia, Atalanta was playing away. So yeah. They won every match, almost every match that they played away. Unfortunately, in Dortmund, it was not going like that. But also in Dortmund, Atalanta played a great match. So I think every culture lover should follow Atalanta, not just because of Europe, because they may go out on Thursday. But if they don't go out on Thursday, they will have the chance to show the culture fans that this Serie A season they may also make us really quite fun, give us some fun. And they're playing very good football, in my opinion. They're one of the teams that are playing better in Serie A under Gasperini. And
for
also
sure.
Gasperini, because he failed at Inter, people are considering him quite bad at the moment. But with Atlanta, yeah. It's really pulling off a miracle.
Yeah, no, I definitely think he turned around his brand. So listen, Bruno, I can't thank you enough. You did a wonderful job. I look forward to chatting with you after a big Atalanta win in the Europa League later in the season. So grazie mille. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we've been trying to give Alex more of a spotlight on the podcast. He's become such an integral part of what we do. So many of our new listeners have come on board thanks to Alex's fantastic videos on Twitter, which are almost always on Chelsea. And Alex has become a calcio expert as well. So we want to give Alex at least a once a week segment where at the end of the podcast he can talk about topics that relate to what we do on Calcio Land. I am going to have him go last, and the reason for this is we try to be respectful to all our audience. There are going to be times where he's going to delve into Chelsea, and the reason he isn't because of the Premier League, isn't so much because he's a fan of the team. It's because you guys know that Sarri has always been a big character on our podcast and our pilot episode. We talked about Sarri. He's always been a favorite, and we want to follow what he does at Chelsea as well. But that won't always be the topic. But because I want to give freedom to Alex to really talk about what he wants, his videos are outstanding. We're going to have him go last. So if you're not interested in this segment, that's fine too. Just don't tweet me saying, oh, I can't believe you're doing this. There's plenty of our listeners that really enjoy what Alex does, including myself. So without further ado, this is going to be the first one, and we look forward to a lot more from Alex.
All right, David. So I'm actually going to mainly be talking to Serie A fans in this quick little segment. I'm going to be talking to Napoli fans, and this is something that is now a week or two old, and I'm not going to rant on this one. I promise you I'm not going to rant, because actually the person I'm talking about, I'm a big fan of, and we also do like the folks over at ESPN, ESPN FC. So this is not me talking down about the person. I'm actually a big fan of Stuart Robson. I think he's a very good color analyst. But many Chelsea fans recently heard these comments from Stuart Robson about Jorginho, of course, the ex-Napoli man and now the current Chelsea player. And if you didn't hear this, Napoli fans, let me read you these comments. And I am not going to go off on a rant afterwards. I'm actually really not going to touch these comments, and it'll be the conclusion of this segment. But I would love, Napoli fans, for your take. You can hit me up on Twitter at @AlexGoldberg_, and I would like your comments, your replies, if you agree with these comments from Stuart Robson. The quote was, I'm not a fan of Jorginho. I've seen him play for Napoli. Napoli were a good side, and I looked at their team, and when I'm picking out players, Jorginho would have been the eighth or ninth player I'd have picked out of their team as the most important player. He went on to say, I can't see what Maurizio Sarri sees in him quite as much. He's not athletic. If you saw him play in the Community Shield, he had an absolute shocker in that game. He was better against Huddersfield, but against the very best teams, I think people can run off of him. He's not going to be a creative passer. He's a passer who just passes it square and sideways. He just keeps things moving. I don't think he's a good defensive player. I don't think he's a good player in that holding midfield role. I know Sarri relied on him at Napoli, but again, I didn't think he was one of their best players. So that's where I'm going to stop there and just chew on that if you haven't seen or heard those comments since they happened about 10 days ago. Very interesting comments from Stuart Robson, who once again, I actually am a fan of. So, David, that is my segment for today. There will be future rants in the upcoming episodes, but like I said, I'm not going to rant at someone I really respect, but I thought those comments were very, very interesting.
Fantastic, Alex. I loved it. What a great way to end the podcast. So we look forward to chatting with all you guys on Thursday. We're going to bring back my favorite guest, Andrew Barker. You guys know he's my favorite guest because we also talk about movies and music. We're catching him at an inter-crisis time, so I'm looking forward to Andrew's contributions. So if you have questions on Inter, music, TV, films, this is your chance because these won't go just to me but to Andrew as well. And as always, we thank you for your support. And keep helping us make Calcioland grow. It only happens because of you.